We got hour number two on this Monday. It's Bickley and Murata. Vic broadcasting live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. It's our pleasure to welcome back to the show, first time in a while. He's the host of the Ryan Russillo Podcast and the Ringer Podcast Network. Ryan Russillo joins us right now here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Ryan, how are you today?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good. Remember sports? Weren't those cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I kind of felt like yesterday I hit a different point where I was watching a bunch of the old NBA playoff games, and then I was like scrolling ahead to go, okay, which ones do I want to tape? And I was like, okay, we don't need to tape seven of these like you have seen it before. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, like everybody else, just trying to find a way to kind of fill that void. So,
all right, you know. So you look at what the NBA is doing. Now, the idea of playing and competing in a bubble, the Las Vegas model, I don't know where that's at, but it seems like the idea of having guys play horse against each other remotely is appealing, probably something you could do quick, get it in, fill some of the void. Your thoughts on what might be in front of the NBA right now?
I'm up for anything. I really am. And I'm not talking like selfishly like we want stuff on TV. I really don't think now is the time, although there's a kind of radio 101, we're really good at it, is somebody comes up with an idea and then all of us go, well, here are all your problems with the idea. I don't want to do that. I don't want to hear it from anybody else right now because this is unprecedented. I remember, you know, less than a month ago talking to the league going, what do you think? And they're like, you know, it's like asking somebody the end of a movie that they've never seen before. Like you can make some guesses, but you don't know. I mean, you don't know. So for anybody that says, okay, well, week one's still fine and the Masters is going to be here, like, okay, great. Like, you know, none of this stuff means anything until we actually know kind of what the playing field's going to be at that point. So anyone or any of these leagues that feel, you know, first medically it's safe enough to do this, I'm not going to have a problem with them trying to figure out a way to salvage the TV revenues, because that's really what it's all about. It's not just the owners keeping their product lucrative. It's the players not losing big chunks of their salary because the NFL and the NBA are partnerships, the way the money split up. And then your TV partners that would love to put something on so that they can make up to their advertisers that have bought all this stuff. So then you start filtering it down how connected it is. It's salespeople out there, they're going to lose jobs, different people on production sites. I mean, there's all sorts of things. So any kind of content these leagues can get on that is cleared to be safe enough, I'm all for. And I'm not going to start from a point of trying to criticize anything that they're doing here. And they're going to try some stuff that doesn't work, but they're just trying to find any way to keep some kind of revenue stream open because so many people are dependent on it. So I'm all for it.
I think that's a healthy way to look at it. And we're talking to Ryan Russillo here on Bickley and Murata. And I brought this point up earlier, and we're kind of in the same boat. I mean, you're a podcast host. We're doing a daily radio show about sports where there's not really any sports going on. But what this has done in a lot of ways is press the individuals, press the entities to be more creative. Now, that being said, since you're not going to dismiss anything, is there an idea that you've had that you'd like to see the NBA or another league maybe do in terms of creating content that we haven't seen yet?
The only thing that I think is really, it is something I talked about before this, and I know an NBA owner, after Simmons and I did it on the podcast, it's something I thought about for a while, but I would start trying to find a way, if I'm baseball or basketball, of filling that void that you guys understand this as daily talk show hosts, that void where it's kind of after NBA free agency to the start of football season. Mm-hmm. So 6 or 7 weeks. And that's why we've seen the basketball tournament, the 3-on-3. Like, that's why there's a hockey 3-on-3 that's coming, that's supposed to be coming in a little while, where everybody's kind of decided, wait a minute, there is this massive void. And traditionally, you know, broadcast partners would tell you that the number of people at home watching TV during those 6 weeks, it's just lower because kids are off and people are on vacation, all those different things. And you go, okay, but eventually as population increases and people are still watching TV when they're on vacation, maybe it's worth having some sort of product on. So if I were the NBA, the first thing I would do is go, you know, we'd never probably would be able to get away with testing if we could have the NBA finals at the end of August. And I still don't even know if that's realistic. But that's the kind of stuff I would be thinking about, where let's use this tragedy, let's use this time to experiment in a way where we will probably never be able to experiment like this before.
Yeah.
And if things are heading in the right direction, you know, let's try to get some of this stuff on here in late August and see what the numbers are.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of trying that, no doubt about it. There was an interesting conversation at the end of last week. I think Rick Bucher started it about LeBron James and maybe how this might be affecting his chance at a title. The fact of the matter is some people think LeBron might have written off 1 year already to go to the Lakers, to get ensconced in a new city, to bring over Anthony Davis. What would it mean to him and some of the aging players in the NBA? Who is the clock really ticking for the most, in your opinion?
If you think about the LeBron part of this, you know, look, I like Rick. He's a great guest. We had him on all the time. He doesn't like LeBron, okay? He doesn't like LeBron. He's been a Kobe guy for a long time. He came on my radio show and called LeBron more of a glue guy than a superstar, and I, like, lost my mind. So to hear him say that, like, he thought LeBron secretly was thrilled so that this way he would get kind of a pass and get credit for what he did with the Lakers making the one seed. Nobody's going to care about the Lakers being a one seed if the season never comes back. 5 years from now, we're not going to be sitting around arguing about LeBron going, you know, it was great that 1 year where he's the one seed, 60 games into the season. Right. Okay, it just doesn't work that way. So LeBron, even though it seems impossible to see this guy age because, you know, he's arguably right there with Giannis, maybe slightly behind him for the MVP thing, eventually he will get old, okay? And Tom Brady extended this further than I thought, and there are plenty of arguments where you could dig into some of the stuff and go, you know, Brady, even without the weapons, actually did get old. I mean, it's going to happen. So for LeBron to lose a year with Anthony Davis when they have a legit chance, I still kind of felt like they were oddly underrated a little bit as a playoff contender when everything shut down, going, you know, should we all be sitting here like thinking, hey, the Lakers are probably the safest bet to pull this thing off, even though we don't love their depth? For him to lose a legit chance at another ring, that's devastating to him. I mean, it really is, because he's not chasing anybody other than, you know, not that he's going to surpass Jordan, but he's chasing this ghost. And for him to lose a chance at 35 years old and say, oh, you know, whatever, he'll have a couple more years, eventually he's not going to look like he does now. I mean, it does happen, even though it seems impossible with him. So I think he's got more to lose than anybody.
You mentioned it. The MVP race was tightening when the league suspended the operation. You know, when it ended, were you of the thought, Ryan, that LeBron James was the MVP? How narrow is that gap between Giannis and LeBron? Or was it too early to tell still?
He was making a push, and what happens is, and I know how the voting works, and there's still, you know, a good chunk of people voting that I think you can be a little bit more impressionable than you think. You know, sometimes I think as opinion people, I'll be like, wait a minute, am I changing my mind because other people are saying this thing, and I feel like I'm this loner out here? And it's still been Giannis's award. I would vote for Giannis tomorrow if that's what we were told to do. But I thought LeBron was making a push, and he was making a push in the way that the awareness was out there. Like that stuff was starting to happen, where there's a nice run, and they'd beaten all these good teams. They beat the Clippers again, beat Milwaukee. And so you could start seeing the sympathy vote. Not that LeBron needs sympathy, but like you guys understand in Phoenix, when Nash gets there and it's this new thing. I mean, hell, it happened with Barkley too. Like Barkley gets there, it's this new thing. It takes him to another height. Voters buy into that. And then people want to go back and look at the stats and go, well, that was the wrong pick. And you're like, yeah, but you're taking yourself out of the moment in that year. And LeBron felt like he was building towards this moment to close the season where more voters were saying, you know what, I think I might vote for him. And that stuff can really kind of get carried away. And, you know, next thing you know, Derrick Rose, this story of this young kid from Chicago leading the Bulls to this great record, ends up getting an MVP where he probably should have lost one to LeBron. But the story of the voting is very, very much a factor, and that was kind of becoming LeBron's story.
All right, so are you excited for the release of Last Dance, and do you think it will help young generation basketball fans realize the greatness of Michael Jordan?
Yeah, there's definitely, I don't know if it's LeBron strategically, like I feel like Bill Belichick's been doing this more the last couple of years where he was allowing way more access because he's such a historian of the game, and it's also like, wait a minute, if I give people more access, maybe they'll understand how much better I am at this than maybe people realize. And, you know, the weird thing, well, there's a lot of weird parts about it, the unfortunate passing of Kobe, but how many players playing today were like, well, that was my guy, you know? And I remember, like, when I was young, I went to one of those Bulls-Celtics playoff games in the series where he scored 63. I didn't go to that game. But, you know, you kind of forget how long he was around. You also kind of forget that, you know, him not having any playoff success the first 7 years. Like, if you think LeBron got a hard time, imagine Jordan playing today. And the debate shows, like, we would have done stuff. We would have gone, yeah, good score, but can't really win.
Skip Bayless would have killed him. Bayless would have destroyed him.
I'm not familiar with his work. Who? I think the MJ thing, like, I've been going back and watching some of these games from the Bulls-Pistons series, like him losing to them and then getting past them. And Now, I'm not – the weird thing is, like, Jordan fans are really protective and sensitive about an argument they've already won. You know what I mean? Like, so – like, I see some of these Jordan tweets. I go, you know, no one's really saying that anybody else is better than this guy. I mean, yes, there's a LeBron fan, and I used to do this weird thing where I used to kind of argue, like, would five Magic Johnsons be the best version of any player you could have, you know, in a five-on-five setting if you could clone people. But
right.
It's going to definitely be a reminder. What's that?
Oh, that's a good one. I like that. You could clone one guy five times. Who gives you the best team?
I just gave you a Tuesday show.
That's
there
a
you go.
Thank you, dude. Thank you, bro. Appreciate
where,
that.
Where do
man.
We send the check, Ryan?
We appreciate
oh,
that.
Oh, go for it. I was big on the Magic thing because of what he did when Kareem turned his ankle against the Sixers. And I go, I don't know that there's that many guys that could, you know, jump center, be a point guard, and then just dominate you at 6'9". Because I always thought, like, Magic could do more. You know, Magic in a different setting would have had better numbers, could have done more things, but he just, you know, look, the Magic thing worked out. I think it's 9 finals in 12 years of playing. Like, I don't think we do enough on that. But, yeah, I mean, the easiest answer to this question that I've taken forever to answer is just yes, of course. More people are going to realize. But there's one little small thing I'd add. When you go back and watch these games, and I know that we've seen the video clips of guys getting tackled and murdered at the rim and all this different stuff. Yes, you were allowed to foul harder and be more physical. And so that gets turned into that the defense was incredible. And I really think that gets overstated. The 80s, the defense in some of the playoff games is laughable. The 90s, it's so collapsed because there's so little shooting that, yes, the paint is more clogged, but they're just guarding less of an area. So I did a podcast with J.J. Redick the other day, and we were talking about this. And look, this is J.J. Redick. You know, who am I, right? I never played a game that we cared about. But J.J. Redick's like, I went back and watched some of the games. We were talking about it. He goes, some of the concepts are so stupid and outdated. Like, it's really, really funny to keep hearing. So I think what's happened is that you're going to see these hard fouls in these physical games, but it didn't happen all 48 minutes where everybody was just tackling each other, and today's player would not want to retire after 5 minutes because he got fouled hard. Today's player would be taking shots where guys would go, what the hell is he doing shooting from out there? I have to guard all of that space.
Yeah.
So it is something to pick up, and it doesn't mean that Jordan's not great. He's still the best, but it's just something when you go back and watch those games, you're like, why would four people all have a foot in the paint here when there's three people wide open? It's like, well, because no one could shoot.
No one could shoot. True.
Ryan Russillo, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Shifting topics to football, we were just having the discussion that it feels like it's that time pre-draft where people, maybe some analysts, are starting to overthink some things. And maybe I'm wrong on this, but to me, Joe Burrow to Cincinnati at number one is a foregone conclusion. But you're starting to hear that that chorus grow a little bit. Maybe they should go with Tua Tagovailoa. We've had one analyst suggest that Justin Herbert at number one. What is your thought on all of that, Ryan?
Well, my boy Cowherd and I did this. I went on his radio show because, you know, I felt like one of the funny things that's happened here and how we debate things is that if you decide you like Tua, then you also have to dump all over Burrow. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, how did that happen? And I like Tua better. I've seen them both live. I mean, I was at the LSU-Bama game this year. You know, if you want to argue against both of them, you could say in that game, this is actually an incredible number. Like, I had Daniel Jeremiah on, and he said he thought maybe 25 NFL teams would trade their entire receiving core for either Alabama or LSU's from this last season.
Yeah.
That's how talented. There was like 11 guys out there that are going to play on Sunday that were catching balls. But Tua, with the health thing, it makes me – like, I still like Tua better. So I don't think taking Tua number one if he checks out medically is that ridiculous. But for anyone to knock Burrow, I mean, the completion percentage this year, he sets a record for it, and it wasn't like he was thrown behind the line of scrimmage and out in these bubble screens all day. I mean, he was chucking the ball down the field. Okay. And I really think there is this kind of unquantifiable thing that maybe ex-players understand better than most of us. But just I have to tell you, like, being on the sideline for five LSU games this year and seeing the command that Burrow has, and yes, I know he doesn't necessarily have the arm strength, but arm strength has become probably one of the most problematic things where you can talk yourself into a guy where Herbert has better arm strength, but I just think Burrow is one of those dudes that has a bit more of the it factor that all the physical stuff doesn't necessarily have to be there And he could still be a bust because 50% of these first rounders in the last 20 years end up being total flameouts no matter where they're picked.
Yeah, so. You're right about that. And the thing is, too, and I got to cover one of their games this past season, and the fact that Alabama could have Tua Tagovailoa and maybe the best collection of wide receivers in college football history and still not beat LSU tells you how good that LSU team was. All right, I got one last thing I want to throw at you. Did you think it was funny how Devin Booker didn't want to play as the Suns in NBA 2K?
I love his honesty. I mean, you know what? I love it. I wish more guys did stuff like that because it's just, you know, you feel like so many guys end up doing stuff like, oh, I can't do that. And Booker's like, I don't care. I'm just doing it. You know, maybe he just doesn't feel like he has to face the locker room the rest of the year with everything that's going on.
That's right. That's right.
Ryan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, brother. We really appreciate
the time and the insight on everything.
Yeah, hang in there, guys. Thanks.
All right, you too. Thank you, Ryan Russillo. He hosts the Ryan Russillo podcast, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter, your family-owned dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. All right, Bick. Going off the grid early in the show,
bud.
Here.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm down with you. You know that.
Today is an anniversary. A very famous anniversary in the world of sports radio.
Oh, I know that.
You do know this.
I do know that. Well, I don't know if it's the same story, but I do know that it's a very famous...
It's actually TV.
Yeah.
Also.
Well, yeah, it's TV, but a guy who's more well-known for radio. Good,
right.
That's a good delineation, Jared. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was very epic. This is the anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
What year was this again?
1994.
This was most of the nation's introduction to the pimp of the box, Jim Rome. When he got into it with Jim, Chris Evert on ESPN2. Jarrett, roll it.
It's Jim. Good to have you on the show.
That was great. That was epic. Have some audio
on the show.
And do not
here,
suck.
Jim, thank you. Check that. Chris Everett, good to have you on the show.
You know what? You know, you've been calling me that for about the last 5 years.
About 2 years, actually, Chris.
Well,
somewhere along the way, Jim, you ceased being Jim and you became Chris.
Well, let me tell you a little secret. That, you know, we're sitting here right now, and if you guys want to take a station break, you can. But if you call me Chris Everett to my face one more time.
I already did it twice.
You call one more time, we better take a station break.
Well, it's a 5-minute segment, a 5-segment show. We got a long way to go.
Well, we do.
We got a long way to go.
We do.
I'll get a couple segments out of
you.
Well,
it's good to be here with you, though.
Well, it's good to see you, too.
Because you've been talking like this behind my back for a long time.
But now I said it right here.
Right, exactly.
Well, we got no problem
I think that you probably won't say it again.
I bet I do.
Okay.
Chris.
It really is.
It's still so outlandish after all these years.
It's
26 years later.
I remember the first time I heard this and watched it, I thought, this has to be set up because there's no way anybody in good conscience would conduct an interview with that much...
Delta Bravo. Yeah,
right.
Well, I was going to ask you guys.
Delta Bravissimo?
Yeah.
Is that the word we're looking for?
There's the name of our sports bar, Vinny. That's it right there. Delta Bravissimo.
Yeah. I was going to ask, do you think that was staged? Because
I don't.
Because Rome comes across as such a
so
tool.
So smarmy.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
So smarmy. But
by the way, if you listen to, and it was very, like, and I can't go back because I didn't listen to his radio show at the time, but, you know, he's evolved over the years, and normally it's very much different when he has a guest on. It's usually like this unhealthy praise toward whoever the guest is. So love that guy. Solid jungle guy, Chris. But I think it was one of those situations where maybe it was, hey, I got to get noticed here. We're on ESPN2. ESPN2 at the time was kind of a joke offshoot of ESPN. You remember Keith Olbermann doing the highlight show with the leather jacket on?
Oh, yeah.
They were trying to be so cool and edgy, and it might have just fallen into that realm.
Might have.
It's classic stuff, and I'm not a big proponent of that type of interview or radio. But I tip my cap to him because if he was that guy that was on his radio show ripping Jim Everett for that long, and then finally got him in studio and stuck by his guns, then more credit to him.
I bet I do. I bet I do.
Chris. But now you're here. Now I'm saying it's your face.
He was a big dude.
Oh, yeah.
He was, I mean, he was like 6'5", 230. I mean, he was a big dude. Jim Rome is not 6'5", 230.
But the way he came over the table and pushed Rome down and then didn't do anything, it's almost like, could a guy really be that enraged but then stop without pummeling him?
I mean, do you want to commit a murder on live television?
It was live television, too. That was the other thing.
Right. But and Rome had that going in his favor because he knew that that would probably mitigate Chris's response.
We'll see. It's possible it was an Andy Kaufman, Jerry Lawler kind of a deal where they set it up to get attention, but I don't know what kind of attention. It makes Rome look like a real jerk face.
Yeah, it kind of does.
I remember, you know, it was a couple years before I started in this business, and I didn't have, Jim Rome's radio show was not on in the Phoenix airwave, so that ESPN2 show was not very very popular. I didn't watch it. That was my introduction because that went viral before viral was even a thing. Everybody was talking about that, and Jim Rome became kind of a household name to sports fans everywhere after that.
And one thing
I guess it worked because his show went like national after.
True.
That.
One thing I'll give to Jim Rome also, that was 26 years ago.
Yeah.
And his hair is a darker shade now than it was then. Amazing.
It's amazing.
I'm epic.
Just for men on my goatee.
It is phenomenal.
That's great. Yeah. What a great anniversary. That's what I'm talking about. When I'm talking about great moments in media, like bits like that, that's one of the all-time greatest.
I also saw over the weekend, I was reading The Athletic, and I don't know how it popped up. Maybe just on their landing page, but they had a Bay Area reporter who, let me see if I can find it here. He did his first ever Bay Area Media Hall of Fame, and he had 25 names that he chose, and then honorable mention to 45 others. So there were 70 names mentioned, and I don't know a ton about the Bay Area media scene.
Uh-huh.
But of those 70 names, only 3 of them were talk show hosts.
Is that right?
There's such a healthy thumbing of the nose by some people about sports talk radio as a medium, which I get a kick out of. Now, some guys crossed over, like Ray Ratto's on the list, and Ray Ratto does a lot of radio.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, obviously for his writing. But, yeah, only 3 sports talk hosts. Tom Tolbert, Ralph Barbieri got into the field, and then there was one other host, Scott Farrell.
Yeah.
That'll be a freak. If you're a freak, get him a cold one.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, that radio show is about the weirdest thing I've ever heard in my life.
That was, yeah.
Pouring people imaginary beers.
Between Jim Rome and Scott Farrell, that was early stages of my exposure to working in sports radio.
Right.
Unlike anything I'd ever heard before. You're exactly right about that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but you know what? I'll tell you what. You're right about that. There was a time in sports media where there was a hierarchy of arrogance. This group looked down on this group, which looked down on this group.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't exist anymore.
So who was the highest?
Media has been so ravaged. Oh,
newspaper reporter?
Oh, well,
or
yeah.
TV,
I would say
anchorman.
I would say that in the old days it would be those who wrote looked down on those who did television, and probably sports radio was the lowest, considered the lowest of them all.
Mm-hmm.
And that just completely doesn't exist anymore.
You don't think?
What, newspaper doesn't exist anymore? You're talking those who wrote? Or the first part of it doesn't exist anymore.
Listen, you look at the sheer numbers of sports writers and where they've gone in the last decade. Absolutely not. I could sit here and talk for hours how the arrogance that was bred in journalism and in newspapering really helped contribute to its downfall. And that was often seen in regards to that.
Yeah, we got plenty of time.
I was going to say you could talk for hours about that.
Okay, we'll make it a topic tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tune in. It'll be my blast tomorrow. How about that?
I like it. I'm looking forward to it. Coming up next, we'll get into some NFL draft talk, and the trends continue for the Arizona Cardinals in the mocks. We'll tell you about it next. We'll tell you about it in a minute. It's Bickley and Murata.
Hey!
On 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Oh, it's Bickley and Murata. On this Monday, Bick coming to you live from the Auction Community Studios. I'm broadcasting from home today, and we're getting closer and closer to the NFL draft, and there seems to be still some construction going on in terms of what the draft is going to look like. And I know there was a report last week, Bick, that EA Sports was getting involved in the whole process of maybe creating virtual moments for the draft, and they were like, well, wait a minute, we're working to support the draft, but what was reported, that's not exactly happening just yet. So
okay,
there's a lot of unknown. April 23rd, still that date. That's 17 days away from today. It'll be here before we know it. Hopefully.
Yeah, no, listen, that's kind of the way I'm looking at it, that I hope that we keep hearing and keep getting excited by potential plans. I've heard about celebrities making appearances via Zoom or Skype or whatever. I've heard about, you know, a charity, an arm being involved here to benefit this pandemic or to help fight this pandemic. And I think that would help really kind of change the optics of the NFL draft for people who might think it's being a little bit superfluous.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, all of that sounds well and good. To me, I'm just crossing off the days. I've never looked forward to an NFL draft more in my life.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of the mocks that are out there, it's updated. You can see all the latest mock drafts on ArizonaSports.com and what it means for the Cardinals. But since March 16th, and why that date? That was the date of the free agency window opening up, the legal mm-hmm. tampering window. That was the day that the DeAndre Hopkins news came down. There's been 92 mock drafts added to our tracker since then. About 90%, sorry about that, about 90% of those have been offensive linemen. 34 for Jedrick Wills, 26 Crazy. For Tristan Wirfs, 14% for Mekhi Becton, 5 for Andrew Thomas, even 3 for Josh Jones, the tackle out of Houston. The only non-offensive lineman to get even one vote or one mock draft, Isaiah Simmons in 5,
mm-hmm.
Derek Brown in 2, Javon Kinlaw in 2, CeeDee Lamb in 1. The CeeDee Lamb one happened on that day, March 16th. So since then, there's not been one wide receiver projected toward the Cardinals at number 8. Which I think is somewhat interesting because of what we did last week in our Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft. We had the pick for the Cardinals. We considered all the options, and we both arrived at the same result separately, and that was, why not just add another weapon to the offense, pick the best wide receiver, and we determined that to be CeeDee Lamb, but the thinking's just not similar in terms of the national mock drafts right now.
I've said this all along, and I'll say it again. I think a lot of the national media, their hearts are in the right places, but I think that they're going off of bad information. They're looking at sack totals from 2019. They're looking at grades and all that kind of stuff, and they're assuming that Arizona, that's a big weakness. I don't think it's a big weakness. Now, if you wanted to make a case that if Steve Keim on draft night drafts Jedrick Wills and comes out and says, look, the guy was too good at his position to pass up. If you watch him on film, you can see the force and the physicality in every block this young man makes. I'll accept that. I won't say that that's a bad pick, but I just think the way that the national media is all over the board in terms of who they're going to select and the fact that they assume that this is such a need, I just think it's bad information. I just think they're wrong. And maybe they'll get the last laugh, and I'll feel really foolish if the Cardinals do take an offensive lineman. And again, if it's Jedrick Wills and you make the case that this was the best player available, okay.
Yeah.
But
well,
that's not what I'm doing.
Do you guys think that Marcus Gilbert would be if healthy, an improvement over whoever he would be replacing?
Marcus Gilbert, when healthy, is a very good player. He hasn't been healthy that often.
He's played in 12 of the last 48 games that he's been eligible to play.
But they did, surprising to us, re-sign him.
Yeah, right.
So they think that he's going to be healthy. that is addressing and upgrading the line right there, which probably, you know, people aren't even looking at because they're just, you know, outside of Arizona, like, oh, well, he was on the team last year, even though he didn't play.
If we're considering health, it also wasn't a massive void where you looked at that line and said, oh, my goodness, Kyler Murray's going to get killed. The line was decent, and I think the health had a lot to do with it. Now, in terms of the playmakers that are out there, and we arrived at CeeDee Lamb, Todd McShay put out his list of the best playmakers in the draft. He's got Ruggs number one. He's got CeeDee Lamb number two.
CeeDee Lamb is big. He's physical. He's great on contested catches. But what I love about him is the run after catch. That's what he does so well. And in the system in Oklahoma, he had great opportunities to be in space and to go create. But he bounces. He's like a pinball. He bounces off of defenders.
Somebody had put together a highlight reel of all of CeeDee Lamb's touchdowns last year at Oklahoma, Bick. Did you happen to see that over the weekend?
Yes, I did.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was very impressive.
Oh, my goodness.
I felt much better about our mock draft selection after watching that.
Yeah, I did too. Number three on that list of playmakers, by the way, maybe surprisingly, ASU's own Brandon Ayuk.
Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State. Get to know this guy's name. We're all talking about Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb and Henry Ruggs as the top three receivers, and they deserve to be. But Ayuk is the fourth or fifth best receiver in the entire class, and he's great after the catch, and he's also an exceptional return specialist. So you're getting value at wide receiver and in the return game.
Yeah, and we reflected that as much in the mock draft that we did. We also had the pick for Jacksonville at number 20, and that was the pick, Brandon Ayuk, which is a little higher than I've seen him going in most mocks.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't be surprised when you hear comments like that from Todd McShay to see the stock rise. Now, going back to the offensive line thing, I have not done all of my my dive into research on Jedrick Wills just yet, but yesterday I did a ton of reading and listening to interviews with Tristan Wirfs, and there's a lot to like.
Uh-huh.
He is the definition of a freakish athlete. You know, at his size, there's a story because he was a wrestling champion in high school. He was a you know, track and field champion in high school. He had stopped caring about the discus. He said, I don't even like it anymore. And he barely qualified for the state meet. He was the last seed. He threw first. He ended up winning the whole meet.
Did he really?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
There's one story of him where they had to, his high school had to adjust the boys' tennis practice because he was throwing the discus so far it was clearing the fence on the tennis courts, and they were afraid kids were going to get hurt. And then the strength, I mean, there's video of him breaking weightlifting records at Iowa. I love all of that. He did have a slip up in his collegiate career early on where he got suspended because he was arrested for operating a vehicle under the influence. He had two friends on a moped at 2 o'clock in the morning at one time. But he even answered questions about that at the combine. The one thing I can't get past on Tristan Wirfs as red flag is, it's followed him through high school, college, and now it's coming up with pro teams and this whole process. He's not mean enough. They want to a team, they all want him to get meaner and become a finisher.
No, thank you. Guys just don't get meaner when they get to the NFL. It's quite the contrary.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like quite a leap to suggest that that's going to happen or to expect that to happen, certainly. There's a lot to like there. Now, when I do all my reading on Jedrick Wills, I'll probably be swayed over to him, too. I'm very easily influenced at this point, Big.
Yeah, well, it's all right, man. It's okay. Like I said, the main thing is to getting to April 23rd with the draft intact. Mm-hmm. That's the bridge I want to cross, Vinny.
Yeah. There are still a lot of people speculating on what the New England Patriots are going to do at quarterback. Is it somebody they already have? Is it a free agent that could be a big name? Is it a draft-eligible quarterback that you've never heard of? They're all possibilities. We'll get into them next. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta. Dan Bickley and Vince Marotta. 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Yeah, as we get closer to the NFL draft, there seems to be more and more eyeballs focusing towards Foxborough, Massachusetts because of their quarterback situation. What are they going to do? Tom Brady is not your fallback plan anymore. He's in Tampa Bay. you now have two quarterbacks on your roster because in recent days, Bick, the New England Patriots have cut Cody Kessler. So now you're down to Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer. Not exactly striking fear into opponents.
No.
So there's a bunch of different possibilities, and all of these could be very quote-unquote New England possibilities. The first one we'll tackle, free agency. With big names like Winston and Newton out there, what are the Patriots waiting for, right? Well, former Patriots executive Scott Pioli, he worked in the front office from 2000 to 2008. He was on an interview on CBS Sports Radio, and he said, quote, "With Cam Newton, the Patriots thing is interesting because I've heard a lot of people talk about that. In my mind, having spent as much time with Bill as I did, I don't see those two coexisting together. The personalities and beliefs of how the game should be played and is played, it seems like oil and water."
Hmm. Yeah, I thought that was very interesting because on the surface, what he's saying makes a lot of sense. A lot of the stuff that we have seen from Cam Newton is the kind of stuff that Bill Belichick does not tolerate. So I buy that. But I also know that Bill Belichick's got this history of kind of being there for veterans at that point in their career when they either need to relaunch or they've been shunned elsewhere. And I think Cam Newton kind of checks that box. So I'm still not shutting the book on it, but Scott Pioli knows Bill Belichick far better than I ever would. And it's an interesting point because there is a lot of that stuff that comes with Cam Newton right down to the hats he wears at his post-game press conference that I think Bill Belichick wouldn't want any part of.
Yeah, in terms of game day attire, could there be two guys more opposite ends of the spectrum?
Think about that.
I mean, we see Bill Belichick in a cutoff hoodie for every game for the last 20 years. And then Cam Newton looks like he's a reject from New York Fashion Week every time he takes the podium, win, lose, or draw.
But we do know that when Cam Newton has been right, and it hasn't been all that often, he's been a terrific dynamic force in the NFL. He's got a lot of miles. He's accumulated a lot of injuries. Mm-hmm. He's had concussions. There's a question as to whether or not he even qualifies as a dual-threat quarterback. Maybe Bill Belichick doesn't want him to be a dual-threat quarterback. Maybe he can sell Cam Newton on, come here, and I'll make you the player that you were always supposed to be. Uh-huh. I'm not closing the book on it. I don't think Bill Belichick would ever take Jameis Winston. I don't think he'd ever go into a season with Andy Dalton as his quarterback. I certainly don't think he'd ever be in a big hurry to go sign Josh Rosen. But I do think,
You'd have to trade for him.
That's true. Sorry. But I do think, part of me thinks that
Josh Rosen,
that under the right circumstances and under the right agreement, he would go down that path with Cam Newton.
Okay.
Scott Pioli thinks otherwise, but I'm just telling you what I think.
Option number two.
All right.
Jarrett Stidham. Now, we've heard some rumblings out of New England. He's really good. They like him a lot. Todd McShay this morning on ESPN's Get Up. Quote, "He was a great backup, in my opinion, coming out of college at Auburn and had a chance to be developed into a starter, but he's not ready yet. That is the bottom line. He's not ready to lead the New England Patriots, in my opinion." He went on to say, now, if you go back and watch him against the Jets, they threw him in that game and he threw an interception. Bill Belichick got annoyed and pulled him out and put Tom Brady back in the game. They were up by about 50 points. From everyone I talked to in the organization, they're excited about his development. He has so much potential. He is gifted. He's been through a lot in his life. He's got some character and some grittiness and some toughness to him, but overall not ready. That wouldn't shock me either. If the Patriots are still out there looking because they don't feel like Jarrett Stidham is ready.
And I think the point to be had there is that there are some people who love Jarrett Stidham, and Carson Palmer's brother, who's biased and who has worked with him, says this guy's going to be a franchise quarterback. The way I look at this, Vinny, is I think this upcoming season is too important to the optics of it all for Bill Belichick to write the year off as a development year under a quarterback who may or may not be ready. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I think there might be a time for Jarrett Stidham. This might not be it. I think it's the move that Bill Belichick would love to make. I think it's the move he wanted to make with Jimmy Garoppolo. But I don't know. I don't know much about Jared Stidham to kind of project what he's going to be.
All right,
I just think Bill Belichick's going to go for somebody a little more proven.
Option three, the draft. Could the Patriots swing a deal to get one of the big-name quarterbacks? Could they play patient and try to get Jordan Love at 23 or move up substantially to get him in the middle of the first round? Here's another name. And this smacks of New England and their way of thinking, too. The Patriots have reportedly had a video call with FIU quarterback James Morgan. Morgan is considered a mid- to late-round draft prospect. Wouldn't that be just the most Belichickian thing to do?
Yes, it would.
We got this kid, James Morgan, from Florida International University, and he's going to be our quarterback for the next 20 years.
Yeah, that's a Bill Belichick thing to do. Everybody's looking over here, and I'm scouting this guy over here by myself. He'd love that nothing more than anything else.
Yeah,
but would you bet your future on something like that? I don't know.
To be able to capture that lightning again, I don't know. Houston Chronicle's Aaron Wilson has reported that the Patriots were among teams closely vetting Morgan earlier this offseason. So they got a lot of options.
You know, and here's what else I think. I think what's interesting is Tom Brady has left the Patriots for the first time in 20 years. All right, and he's come to define the Super Bowl run as much as Bill Belichick. Since Tom Brady left the Patriots, Robert Kraft has been very active in trying to help out the city of New York to the point where the governor of New York is now embracing Robert Kraft. There's videos of
hopefully from 6 feet away.
The Patriots team plane flew masks from China. A Patriot truck received a police escort to get him from Foxborough to New York City. My point is this, is that the Patriots for a long period of time recently kind of been like an evil empire. I think they might have a different kind of shine on them next year without Tom Brady. And it's all part of this story of regeneration for not only Tom Brady, but that organization.
Yeah, I think they're one of the most fascinating teams to watch over the next couple of months.
Oh, no doubt.
In the NFL, certainly. Coming up next, we are off and running with the second half of the show because the Bickley Blast Woo-hoo! Is straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.